groups, but also for the health of the local communities and to curtail.
Got to go. I'm out of time. I'm so sorry, KG. We're out of time. More to come. I'm Dennis Berenstain. That's it for the show today.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Stage and studio. We're listening to music from Kenji Bunch, music composer and artistic director of Fear No Music. He's one of the featured performers of an unusual event, which we're going to talk about. Today we're going back in time, sort of, to the old drive-in, but instead of seeing a film, you can see performing artists all from the comfort of your car. Boom Arts is teaming up with Risk Reward to present Pavement, a parking lot performance drive-in. That's on Saturday, July 18th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. And with me via Zoom to talk about this is Tracy Cameron Francis, someone I've been wanting to meet for a while. Tracy is a first-generation Egyptian-American director, an interdisciplinary artist and arts producer, and she's currently the artistic director of Boom Arts, a Portland organization that presents and produces contemporary theater and performance from around the world. Hey, Tracy. It's great to meet you via Zoom, finally.
I know. I've heard lots about you.
And likewise, you know, it's great to be able to take this time. So when did you officially take the reins of Boom Arts?
About exactly a year ago, almost. So last July. So it's my 1 year anniversary.
Wow, 1 year. And so what made you want to run this organization?
Well, I've worked with Boom Arts basically since they were founded. I was living in New York then, but my family is from Portland, so I would go back and forth quite a bit. So it gave me an excuse to come back and visit my parents. So I've directed numerous things for them over the years. I've gotten to know Ruth and the organization. And I'm just really passionate about both political performance and also international performance.
And that was Ruth Wickler, who was the original artistic director of Boom Arts. And so you did a couple of shows with Boom Arts prior to that. And you said your parents live here in Portland?
Yeah, my mom's here in Portland. And so I moved back a couple of years ago. I've been going back and forth from New York and then officially mostly have been here this year. Now I'm really here because I can't travel anywhere.
Now, did you grow up here or did you?
Yeah.
You did?
For college, yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
I'm native.
So where did you go to college?
I went to Fordham University in New York for college and stayed stayed there for a while.
Because you describe yourself as a first generation Egyptian American, and I call myself a 1.5 generation Asian American or Chinese American, because I was born in Taiwan and then I came over when I was 8. So I was just curious, what was your migration story?
And my mom is from the U.S. and my dad came to the U.S. to study, to do his PhD and master's, and then stayed.
Would it be fair to say that you're one of the few, if not, I don't know, at least in Portland, the only Egyptian American director in town?
As far as I know, yeah. I'd love to meet another one if there is one.
Yeah, yeah. If anyone who's listening, you know, just
I want to be your friend.
Yeah, exactly. So this is really cool. So and you've worked in New York. You went to Fordham University there, as you said, and you lived in New York for a very long time and worked there. You worked at La Mama Culture Club, New York International Fringe Festival, Manhattan Shakespeare Project, just to name a few, and you also worked, I love this, that you actually worked in Egypt. And so what was that like for you?
I actually directed my very first show there because I figured I was spending a summer there anyway with family, and I figured if I messed up directing there, and then no one would know. And so I produced and directed my first show there and realized I really loved directing, because I was kind of focused on acting before in college, and I switched when I got back and just kept directing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, I think that would be special. I mean, you also directed in Italy and Rwanda, too.
Well, Rwanda's funny because I actually wasn't physically there. It was a show I had directed in New York that was presented at a festival there, and I had to Skype into my rehearsals in Rwanda, to the tech rehearsals. So I was remotely telling them which lights to use to do and things like that.
Well, then you had ample preparation for what we're going through now with the coronavirus, because you've had this experience of being able to work virtually.
I've actually done quite a bit before this. I had done quite a lot of virtual work because I work with a lot of international collaborators, and it's not always possible to travel to each other. So I'm familiar with video rehearsals from long before.
What's your best advice for doing video rehearsals?
I mean, well, because when I rehearsed for video, it wasn't for video, so it was very different. It's difficult because, like, when I was rehearsing, it'd be movement pieces, so I'd be like, oh, you're out of the frame, move your cat, and then I'd be like, go over here. So it's definitely trickier because there's just not that normal interaction, but I think it can work. It can work, just you have to have a good internet connection for a while. That's best advice.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to rehearse that way, because I think it's quite possible, especially, you know, regarding movement and such. It seems like you could see the whole room that way, you know, if it's positioned that way. But I think that's fascinating. And you know, what was the first time? I guess I always ask this because, you know, especially when you have immigrant parents, or one immigrant parent like I did and you did, there's often not an understanding of why somebody would want to, like their child would want to go into theater. I was just wondering, what made you want to go into theater? You know, what was the response to that?
Well, my poor parents, my brother and I are both in the arts. My brother's a composer, work in theater. And believe me, there was a lot of things. Don't you want to be a doctor? What about law school? For many, many years. Now that I actually make a living at it, I think they're feeling a little, and mostly I think it's just that fear of, you know, not being able to make a living or not, you know, being taken care of. But once my parents figured out I could actually make some money on it, I think they felt a little bit better.
I think that's the point where it changes, you know. Oh, okay, well, that's fine then, you know, but it's always doctor or lawyer.
Yeah, but a lot of my family's in the arts, and even in Egypt, so my family's pretty used to it.
That's so funny. So when did you realize that you wanted to do the arts? What made you realize that?
I mean, I did some theater in high school, and in college I actually majored in politics and minored in theater because so my first passion was actually international relations and politics, but I decided rather than becoming a bureaucrat, I could be more effective working in art. I'm using art as a platform to connect people and to create awareness and work that way. So, yeah.
And did you have role models when you were, you know, studying in college or even before that?
Yeah, I mean, in college, I would say I started working in New York professionally while I was in college. So I worked with a lot of great directors there. I say one of my biggest role models is, like, when I was younger, was Ellen Stewart at La Mama. Because I worked there just in her last final years, and I actually performed in her last show there. which I don't hate performing, but I did it because she asked me to, because she was just a wonderful person in terms of supporting artists and just doing everything out of love and making sure that she was really helping people and giving artists what they need. And so I kind of use her as inspiration of how I can also support artists here.
Oh, that's good. And that's a perfect fit for Boom Arts then, too, because that's a lot of what Boom Arts, you know, has been doing and is doing. In case you just joined us, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio, talking with Tracy Cameron Francis via Zoom. And Tracy is a theater director and artistic director of Boom Arts, which is partnering with Risk Reward to present Pavement, a parking lot performance drive-in. And that's on Saturday, July 18th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. And both shows are at the Central East Side parking lot, which will be a secret location revealed, I guess, when you buy tickets. And tickets seem to be on a sliding scale rate with a recommended starting admission price. Can't really mention it on the radio, but it's pretty decent. And reservations can be made at web.ovationtix.com, and I have that link at kbu.fm/stageandstudio or stageandstudio.org, where you can also hear the podcast of the show. Tracy, so when did you decide to produce this with Risk Reward, and how did that all come about?
Well, I've been kind of chatting with Katie. I've worked with her before, and we're friends, and we were both kind of discussing how we missed live performance,
and that's Katie Watkins.
Katie Watkins, yeah, Risk Reward. Yeah, we both were really missing live performance, and, you know, just not really feeling the same fulfillment from the Zoom events. And we were just thinking about how could we do something that was going to be safe, but still have that sense of community and liveness that wasn't on the internet. And so this, you know, we talked about a lot of ideas, and eventually we settled on this as our first simple, you know, trial event, to see how it goes. And we also really wanted to be able to support and pay local artists, because everyone's been out of work. So that was a really important aspect of it.
So when you said that you thought it was simple, it doesn't really sound that simple, because there are several people, you know, several artists that are participating. Everybody's in their car, and you also connected with X-Ray FM to use the signal to boost, you know, the sound. So tell us about all the moving parts.
Well, this idea is simpler than some of our original ideas. Our first ideas were pretty crazy. So this simple, I say, in terms of our other initial ideas. But yeah, it's going to be, so we're working with X-Ray FM. So it's going to be kind of like a regular drive-in, and the 7 o'clock show will actually be streamed on the radio. So even if you are at home, you can listen in. And it will also be live stream video on X-Ray FM's website, so you can also watch it from home. And the 9 p.m. show, we are going to be doing shortwave radio into the cars. So you can just tune it in, and if you don't have a car radio, you can listen through your phone on their website app, too.
How many cars do you think you can hold in the parking lot?
Oh, hold on, I'm going to count on my fingers here on my one hand. We have spots for 32 cars. And we also have some standing room spots if you don't own a car, so it's still accessible. And those are completely spaced out. You must wear a mask. And I should mention that our car spots are actually sold out for both shows. But we do have some standing room available. And if you can't get in, you can watch it or listen in from home, too. So.
Well, that's exciting that there's been such a huge response already. I think people are kind of starved for some kind of event.
Yeah, I think, people are just kind of craving something to go to that's also feels safe. And that's my main priority is make sure this feels safe for the performers, for the audience, for everybody.
And so when people are standing, I mean, I assume, what kind of safety precautions have you taken for this event?
We only have a few standing spaces, and we're spacing them out about, 10 to 12 feet in between people. And only one person can stand in the spot, and they have to wear the masks for that.
And how about for people in their cars, especially when it gets warm, you know?
If they would like to roll their windows down or put the sunroof up, they got to put a mask on. So if you're not in a fully enclosed car, you must wear a mask.
Well, I assume that people aren't going to have them running so that they can have the AC on.
Yeah, no, they can't have the cars running. That wouldn't be very healthy for anybody.
Especially for the standing people or the performers, right? So when you...
Late enough, so I'm hoping it'll be cool enough by the evenings.
Yeah, by 7 and especially by 9 p.m. I remember when you put out the notice for performing artists, you know, and it sounded like a great idea. And how many artists and groups do you think responded to that initial RFP?
Oh, we probably had around 15 or 20 responded.
And you chose how many altogether? Because you have some great people like Suba Ganesan, who is the Portland Creative Laureate and runs New Expressive Works, and Olienka Akinjiola, who's Artistic Director of Rejoice Diaspora Dance Theater, and of course, Kenji Bunch, Artistic Director of Fear No Music, and Anya Pearson, actress and playwright. So, who else is in the show?
We have,
Did I say them all?
I think missed a couple.
There's Garen Mitchell.
Yeah, Garen Mitchell is going to be doing a monologue with movement. And then we have Amenta Abioto, who's an amazing electronic musician. She just kind of vocals with looping. It's really cool. And then we'll have an artist from the Portland Opera to be announced.
Oh, TBA, huh? Okay. Well, we're really at a revolutionary time in the arts, too, so I'm kind of pivoting here. This is sort of a revolutionary way of presenting performing arts that we're used to seeing, you know, on a stage, in a theater, right? But I love this idea, the pavement productions, or the pavement. So this is kind of a revolutionary idea with the pavement, a parking lot performance drive-in. And again, that's July 18th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. And also, it seems like, you know, the best way to see it right now is virtually. So that's, you know, I love all those options. But, you know, we're also at a revolutionary time in the arts when many artists of color are speaking out for reform, for anti-racism, you know, I guess more, codes of conduct and all kinds of ways of people to look inward and do some soul searching and really look at their organizations and look at their policies and look at the way that artists of color have been treated. And I'm just wondering what your response to this time period that we're living in right now is.
Yeah, I mean, well, with Boom Arts, we've put together some action steps that we had already been working on, and we have them published on our website to hold us accountable. And one of them is to make sure the majority of the artists in every season are BIPOC artists. And that includes our lead artists and then all other artists and contractors and people being hired.
And what do you think about in general, like for with just in general, like I want to say, you know, because I've seen organizations that aren't predominantly, you know, BIPOC, you know, really doing actively looking at changes. And I think that's a big step for many organizations, you know, and I hope that it lasts. I really do.
And I think it's an ongoing process. I think, you know, small and large organizations, we have to keep being critical and keep looking at our policies and our ways we're hiring and presenting artists and doing all those things and continually be examining ourselves and continually looking at these policies and how can we make them better. And looking doing that and doing that inward work constantly. I don't think it's over or it'll be done. I think it's continuous.
Yeah, that's the part that often doesn't happen, that like sometimes, you know, there are periods of time where, oh yeah, we could do better, you know, and let's make some changes, and then it sort of slides back into the norm, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we all have to hold each other accountable, and organizations have to hold themselves accountable too, to make sure that these statements or these actions that people are putting out are actually followed through on and built on even and continue to, you know, find even greater things that can be done.
Yeah, I really like the momentum and I hope that it keeps up. I was wondering, have you mostly worked for predominantly white organizations?
It varies. A lot of my work as a director has been for doing Middle Eastern and North African work. But a lot of the times the producers are white, which is always a fun special challenge. Just because it's cultural competency isn't always there from the producer's perspective always for things. But in terms of myself, like, so I'm the only employee of Boomarts right now, so yay. And I ran a theater company in New York called Hybrid Theater Works, which was a kind of a collective of first-generation immigrant artists.
Yeah, I'm sorry, say that again.
It varies in my work, depending on if I'm freelancing or working for myself.
Well, you know, I would imagine as an Egyptian-American theater and performing arts director that you've kind of hinted at it, but you did face structural racism and experience that in your career. And I'm wondering, you know, how, you know, how you've dealt with that. And, you know, when you say that you've, you know, often, you know, if you work in Middle Eastern productions or Egyptian productions, you would probably be the only person in the room that would, you know, in the administrative, you know, end or the staff end that would know, you know, what you know. So how have you coped with that or dealt with that?
Yeah, I mean, I have had the opportunity, like last year, I did a show in New York for Noor Theater, which is a Middle Eastern theater company. So that's lovely because they know what they're doing. I think as I'm getting older, I'm learning to just be more vocal about demanding that the crew, like my design, I get to pick my designers, I'm casting, you know, I'm just asking for certain things. So if I have like a costume designer who's trying to push, you know, stereotyped costumes on me, I speak out against that or ask for a new costume designer and just kind of learning to be more vocal about it. And I'm also on the steering committee for, we just formed a national organization for Middle East, North African Theater Makers Alliance. And we have basically a bill of rights for Middle Eastern North African artists that producers can look at and read is on our website that we just put up. And we have various steering committees just kind of advocate for better representation and make sure that we want theaters to do our work, we want them to be culturally competent and to hire, you know, not just to have the visual representation on stage with the cast, but also make sure the director, the crew, the producers are also MENA as well, so they know what they're doing.
Where would people find that list of practices?
Yeah, our website is menatheater.org.
Okay, and how would you spell that out?
MENATHEATRE.org.
Okay, yeah, I think that's great. It's good to be able to share those resources, and I'll put that on the website too, on my websites. You know, it's so interesting that, you know, this work hasn't been done as much before, you know, all the upheaval and the, you know, the revolution that's taking place, which I think has been actually quite positive, even though it's been difficult. And I'm wondering, you know, what would you personally like to see happen regarding performing arts and EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion? Especially in Portland, what would you like to see happen?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things that can happen. And actually, I don't know if you've seen that the list of demands is actually put out by a group of artists, BIPOC artists. I think the leadership and the boards need to change. I think for real change to happen, it needs to happen at the top levels. And so I think, you know, there needs to be some reckoning with who the leadership is of organizations, from the board to the artistic staff. Because if the leadership doesn't change, I don't think the policies will change. And then it's still kind of just hiring people to hire them rather than really examining the structure of your organization.
Yeah, I think definitely. And I don't think that most people know where to see that. I don't think it's been, I've seen it on Facebook, but I haven't really seen like a particular website for that.
The website is wecuwat.com, which stands for White American Theater.
And that's for the list of demands regarding theater specifically.
You can download the demands, and also there's testimonials of artists' experience in different places and different resources on there as well. And I recommend everyone to check it out.
But you've also worked outside of theater in more interdisciplinary type work, and also what would be considered more experimental. Are the set of circumstances different regarding inclusion in those fields as well?
I mean, in the visual arts world and performance art world, there's still a lot of the same problems that are in the theater world. The work I did is more, I would say, underground, or work I produced or did myself or was commissioned to do, so I just did what I wanted. And there's definitely less oversight when I do performance art work, because they just like, here, make a thing, have fun, and I do it, and then they expect it to be crazy, and so it's fine.
Well, what's next for Boom Arts after this Pavement parking lot performance?
Well, like everyone else, we're kind of waiting and seeing. We're going to be really focusing this fall. So our mission is to imagine new social and political possibilities through performance. And this fall, we're going to be really focusing on other ways we can manifest that mission in the community. It might not be necessarily performance, but looking at more social action and community service projects this fall. And then by the spring, we had a season plan. So we'll see by the spring what's possible to do. Some of our performances might be outside. Some might end up being partly digital, part in person. And then we've moved our summer festival that we were supposed to have this summer outdoors to next summer. And I'm pretty confident that by next summer, we'll have figured out a way to safely do a summer festival outdoors, and that'll feature international performances in parks and streets, basically a much larger version of Pavement over several days.
Yeah, that's what we're all hoping for, you know, like next spring, next summer, you know, maybe we could be, you know, coming out of the gloom, right? And now I don't think anything's ever going to be completely back to normal, but at least get something that isn't what we're going through right now.
Yeah, and if, you know, and if it's not getting better, then, you know, I think keep finding creative ways to bring people together and to have performance. And I personally like challenges like this where I get to come up with different formats, and I find it's interesting because you're also going to get different audiences into when you're doing different types of theater that aren't necessarily in a theater space, because that tends to not be comfortable for a lot of people to attend in general, even outside of a pandemic. So I'm in general very interested in different forms of performance to reach new audiences and communities.
Well, that's very exciting, and I'm so glad that we had this chance to talk together. So Boom Arts and Risk Reward are presenting Pavement, a Parking Lot Performance Drive-In, and that's Saturday, July 18th at 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. And they've also partnered with X-Ray FM, and so if you want to watch it virtually, it's on the X-Ray FM website. Is that correct?
And they can also listen in at 7 o'clock on the regular radio.
And just listen just to the audio of it. Okay, because there's lots of great music in it, too, and spoken word. Yeah. Well, that's so exciting. Well, thank you, Tracy, Cameron, Francis. Thank you for joining me today via Zoom. And, yeah, it was great to get to know you better.
You too. That was lovely.
That's it for Stage and Studio. Hear this show again on stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter N studio, and tweet me at stage, the letter N studio. Till next time, I'm D-May Roberts. We're going out with more music from Portland composer and musician Kenji Bunch, who's featured in The Pavement, a Parking Lot Performance Drive-In.
KBOO Portland.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.